WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today. At least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome to Monday Night Talk. No, please. Please take your seats. Please take your seats. Let's start the program. My name is indeed Kevin Tachi, and we have a great show lined up for you on this Martin Luther King Jr. Day holiday, birthday of the great doctor. Starting after traffic, we will speak with State Representative Kathy Lenatra. She's already in the house. She's already here. Say hi.
Hi. Happy to be here, Kevin.
You know what? I like it when it's like the folks who are like the southern part of the South Shore. You, Matt Muratori, Josh Cutler, it's like you guys, like, you'll promote it. I'm coming on, going on the show, going on the radio station.
And so we're close by, too, which is very helpful. I was with Matt this morning. I heard he was here last week.
See, and, you know, had I known if we were going to be having a conversation about all the celebration going on in America's hometown, Plymouth, the 400th.
Yes.
I don't know if people heard that, but I just kind of slapped myself on the wrist for not inviting you to the conversation. I apologize.
Had I known, I would have invited myself. You know that. I did invite Matt tonight, but he was busy.
Well, we'll get into that.
Okay.
I know you've been busy. Here we are at the start of the second part of the session. We'll talk a little bit about that. And also kind of get an idea as to some of your priorities for the remainder of 2020. Whether it's your priorities or some of the district priorities, or maybe the state priorities.
Oh, lots of priorities. We're working on a lot of things. So I have had filed a bill, I think I mentioned it before, the voter safety bill.
Mm-hmm.
And that, happy to say, has been voted favorably out of committee and is now in Ways and Means. And I have a meeting next week with the chair of Ways and Means. So I'm really pushing for that to go forward. We've had a lot of support with all of the Harbor Masters throughout Massachusetts. The environmental police are great supporters. So we're really pushing for that.
And you also brought with you.
I also brought with me Chris Jean, who is my legislative aide from Plymouth, Massachusetts.
I asked him to sit down. He's like, I'm not going on air. Am I? No. But when we were up at the State House during the summer, it was great to bump into him and chat with him. And you get a great aide. So
I do. I'm very fortunate. Very fortunate. And a bright aide, too. He's a graduate from George Washington University and was also an intern for Congressman Keating in D.C.
Wow.
So I lucked out.
Very good. Well, but see, with all that success he already has, you might only have him for...
I know.
I mean, he might be running for office, or he might end up being pulled into another government office.
There's great things ahead for Chris Jean.
Absolutely. So besides Representative Lenatra, we are going to be speaking with some folks from the Brockton City Council, at-large Councilor Rita Mendez, already here. Hanging out. She was here early. Thank you very much, Counselor. She'll be joined by Wynn Falwell and Susan Nicastro. And we'll talk everything Brockton. I should have dragged Lindsay Parker in because I bumped into her. She's, of course, doing our signal, doing 1460 during the drive time, afternoon drive. So should have dragged her in to be a part of the conversation. But she's driving home safely right now. So maybe one of these times we'll have Lindsay come on the show and hang out for a few minutes. And so besides talking everything Brockton, the new two-year term and new mayor, kind of get an idea collectively with these city councilors as some of the direction of the city of Brockton under new leadership. And then we'll close things out with theater. Do you like theater?
I love theater.
Yeah. Okay.
So, so does Chris. Chris loves theater, too.
Really?
Yes.
Did you do any theater at George Washington?
Not at GW. I did Rent in high school.
You did?
Yeah.
Who were you in Rent?
I was Roger.
Get out of here.
Yeah, I got pulled in.
Wow.
Late,
who knew?
Who knew?
I didn't either. I only had one. I was only my only play.
Really?
Yeah.
We'll have to talk. That's very, very cool. Well, we got Mark Rushto who's going to be here. And he'll talk a little theater, some of the things that are going on. Is Mark is the coordinator of Massasoit's down as far as the Buckley Performing Arts Center. And he is the producer of many of the shows that hit the stage down there. And he is the fine arts coordinator at Massasoit Community College. So we'll chat with him at 7:30.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan's Smoke Shop. Having a hard time with your New Year's resolution? Well, I have a couple of really good ones for you. If you like to drink alcohol, maybe you should resolve never to drive drunk. If you don't like to drink, you could resolve to always wear your seatbelt while traveling in your car. This message is brought to you by Brennan's Smoke Shop. Brennan's Smoke Shop wishing you a happy and safe New Year. And always wear your seatbelt. Always.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk, WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we return for our very first segment. We teased it. The opening of the show was the state representative, Kathy Lanatra, representing the 12th Plymouth District. You may not know this, but she's actually been named by a special group, Legislator of the Year by the Massachusetts Mental Health Counselors Association.
Yes.
What a prestigious award.
It was a prestigious award. I was very pleased and honored to receive it. I was their keynote speaker at their last annual year celebration, not a celebration, it's a conference. And I was asked to speak at that, and I was honored to be asked. And they asked me to speak originally for an hour and a half. I was a little concerned with that. No one wants to hear me speak for an hour and a half. I don't want to hear me speak for an hour and a half.
I'm with you. I don't want to speak for an hour and a half.
It was a long time.
It for a living. And, you know, I would prefer to bring people in and then we have a conversation.
And then we have a conversation. But it did turn out. It turned out really well. It wasn't an hour and a half. It was a good 45 minutes. But we did have a great conversation at the end. There was a few hundred people there. And then I was presented with the award, which is just such an honor, because mental health is, you know, it's a really important thing. A lot of people don't know that 1 in 5 children suffer from mental health. And when you talk about mental health, it also brings in other things, addiction and homelessness and lots of arrests and things like that. So there's a lot around it. And suicide. We've seen a real uptick, actually, in suicide for first responders. That's been going on. I've been looking deeply into that. I know that you know that my husband used to be a detective in the gang unit in New York City. And in last September, he had to go back to New York because his former partner died by suicide. So it became very important to him. And we both looked into it and realized it's been just an enormous, it's had an enormous, people are talking about it more, but when you really look into it, the first responders are really get hit hard with this. Really hit hard. So I've been doing a lot of things with Jenny Babcock. Do you know Jenny?
I know of her.
Yes. So we've I've attended some trainings, which has been wonderful.
It's interesting. 2019 was a banner year for you. Not only being named Legislator of the Year, but Dancing with the Dignitaries champion.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
How do you top that in 2020?
I don't know. I hopefully next year I'll just be a judge, since I'm a winner, maybe I'll just be the judge.
I think you should defend your championship.
Oh, I don't think so. I think it was a one-time deal. It was definitely a one-time deal. It was interesting. It was fun. It was definitely fun. But when I do things, I do to win, because I come from a very competitive family. So when I said yes, I had that competitive spirit, so I was going
to
win.
That's fantastic. Let's take a moment to reflect about the good Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I know yourself, and I think Representative Muratori, who we're talking about earlier, attended Plymouth's breakfast and unity celebration. How was today's event?
It was wonderful. It was very well attended. We had Reverend Brown came from the 12th Baptist Church in Roxbury, and he gave such an inspirational speech. People were standing, applauding. He was very inspirational. We had a band play that was phenomenal. Many speeches, and just the whole community coming together was wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. And not only was Matt there, Ken Tavares was there from the Board of Selectmen in Plymouth, and Patrick Flaherty from the Board of Selectmen, and Chief O'Terry was there. So it was a great crowd.
Talk to me about the importance of remembering the good doctor and what his mission was as far as equality goes.
You know, in the climate that we're in now, it's really important to look back. And I was going over a lot of his quotes today. And it's just so important that we all really work together. And one that we have in our bathroom, in my kids' bathroom, is, you know, if you can't fly, then run. If you can't walk, if you can't run, then walk. If you can't walk, then crawl. But just move forward. And that has been a philosophy in our house for a long time. So it's very important that we remember the past and remember the people that fought for what we have now and continue to do that, but we really just need to come together.
What's it like to attend an event like that as an elected official, not as a municipal, because you've done that, as a select person in Kingston.
Correct.
But now as someone who serves the state as an elected official.
It's actually an honor. It's actually an honor to be able to attend as a state representative. A lot of the times I get to speak, which is wonderful too, but I get to meet all these different people from the community and many more constituents. Had I not run for state representative, I may not have known these wonderful people and the wonderful things that they do. So that, I really enjoy it. And I do attend a lot of things. I'm out probably.
You're everywhere.
Everywhere. I wish I could clone myself. 6 towns is a lot of towns to cover.
I don't know. You've been hanging out with Senator Mike Brady here and there, and I suspect that he's been cloned.
Mike Brady?
Yeah.
He may have been cloned. We
I
were
think
together.
He might. You have to look behind his ear to see if it's like a 2 or a 3.
He's a lot of places. We were together in Plimpton and met with the officials in Plimpton, the town administrator and some selectmen. And also the town
fire department got a grant, right?
The fire department got a grant, which is amazing. They've done over their fire department inside, their kitchen, their sleeping quarters. It looks fantastic.
So here we are, just a couple of weeks ago, started the second session of the 191st General Court. What's it like starting the second half of your session?
Well, I will tell you, the first year flew. You blink and the first year is over. You're learning constantly. I'm still learning constantly. But the great thing about the second session is I get to hear the State of the Commonwealth address from Governor Baker on Tuesday night, which is tomorrow. And I'm really looking forward to that.
What are you expecting? Is there anything besides talking about the 2021 budget? Anything that he might touch upon? Did, as a legislator, have you gotten any kind of insight as to what he may touch upon that might resonate with folks here down the South Shore?
I believe he's going to touch on transportation and climate control. So he'll probably talk about the Transportation Climate Initiative. Mm. And, of course, the budget in that. But it'll be interesting to hear, you know, transportation, especially in Boston, is an issue, and I drive into Boston a few days a week. I carpool most of the time, and even in the HOV lane, it's taking us an hour and 45 minutes from Kingston.
Yeah.
So, you know, transportation's an issue for most people.
Do you feel that the T in public transportation is still something that the governor's trying to get right?
I do. And I, you know, hopefully it'll be sooner than later, but a lot of money needs to go into that.
I know last year, his speech last year, he touched upon housing. Housing was a big deal. That housing stock is low. Do you think there's a follow-up to that?
I'm hoping so. Affordable housing is a huge issue on the South Shore. As you know, I'm also a real estate broker, and I see it all the time. I have all these young families that are looking for a home, and there's just such a small pool that are affordable. And for that one affordable house, there are 8 offers on that house. And it's really hard. And as I state all the time, you know, I have a 26-year-old that would love to buy a house. You know, you have all these, your older children that have come home from college and they're living in your basement.
It's part of the American dream.
It is.
As I was growing up, that was part of the American dream.
To own your first home, right?
Get educated, mm-hmm. Get a good job, buy a home, white picket fence optional, maybe own a couple of vehicles, have some children, get them started on their way, start the process over.
This is the first generation that may not do as well as we did, and it's disheartening. And our seniors, you know, we have our seniors that are still living in these big homes and paying these big taxes and aren't able to keep up their homes. So now they're losing value in their home. But to move to something smaller is still extremely costly. So affordable housing for our young people, for our seniors, for our working people, for our teachers, for our first responders, it's necessary.
Has there been legislation teased about rent control? Anything that you know of or that there's a conversation about invoking it, whether it's something that is on the state level or something that municipalities may want to use?
They did recently have a hearing on rent control, and I was not at the State House that day, but I believe there was a big rally in front of the State House that day.
See, I would wonder how people would feel if you owned a property and someone's gone, rent cannot exceed a certain amount. Well, I have a mortgage.
You have a mortgage? You may have college tuitions.
Sure.
You know?
Sure, and then upkeep of that property, it's
mm-hmm.
not cheap.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely isn't cheap, so it's something to definitely keep in mind. Just so you know, we are speaking with State Representative Kathy Linatra. She is our guest representing the 12th Plymouth District. I saw you very exuberant just a week ago as we saw the passage of Nikki's Law.
Wasn't that a great day?
How important is this new law when it comes to those who abuse those with disabilities?
I think it's an important law for everyone. You know, everyone, we need to do the right thing. And we do have the sex offender registry, right? Mm-hmm. So this, those who are not familiar with Nikki's Law, what it would do is people that care for people with intellectual or physical disabilities, mostly in a group home, that have been accused of or committed of abusing, whether verbally or physically, would be put on a registry. So they wouldn't be able to be hired again. So when another group home goes to hire someone, they have to check with this registry.
And this is something that has the governor already put his signature on it?
We're waiting for the governor, and once the governor signs, it'll be in a law. Senate passed it before the House.
Were you surprised that the House, it was unanimous.
It was unanimous. We've had a few unanimous votes, and it's very exciting.
Does that surprise you?
No, not being in there. That's how it really, there's been a few that have been split, but that's not, you know, it's not party lines at the House. It's your district, and it's the Commonwealth, and the good of the Commonwealth, and it's really the good of the people, our constituents, that we're really looking to assist and help. So I'm not surprised, no.
Well, I know the world is in short supply of it, but I think also it's common sense.
It is common sense.
Common sense.
Common sense. And it's been 3 years in the making, and I believe it was Senator O'Connor that filed that bill. And it's been 3 years to get that passed.
That's fantastic.
It was a great day. A great day.
Talk to me about your priorities for the coming year. Have you set any? Is it something that you take it as it comes? What are you looking
We're actually looking on filing some late bills around the OUI issue. Just researching that, you know, the goal is to not get into the car and drive drunk. You know, we have the severest penalties across the United States, but it really doesn't do anything because the damage is already done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it does do something, but the damage is already done. So it's really to stop someone from doing it. We've looked into the interlock system that they've used, maybe doing that sooner. Chris and I have been researching different issues with that, but we've been looking in things like that, some mental health issues, which I told you with our first responders,
sure.
Some bills around that, and then some priorities for our district. So we'll hopefully get a little money for our district, bring a little bit more home for our district this session, this year.
And when we talk about bringing money home, bringing the bacon home. Bringing home the bacon. Knowing that you signed into law last year in regards to being able to properly fund education.
Mm-hmm.
Do we start seeing residuals from that, or is that something only like gateway cities are going to see the
we
monies?
We won't see as much down here in the 12th Plymouth as the cities will see, but it's a step forward. You know, it's a first step. It's a step forward. It hasn't been changed in a very long time. So I'm positive about it. I'm hopeful that more will be done on that, that will help our towns down here in the 12th Plymouth and the whole South Shore.
Okay. I'm going to ask you something that's election-based.
Okay.
As you know, there's a number of people who are vying for Senator DiMacedo's seat.
There are.
Are you watching this race closely? Because I think it's important that as a group, whether you're a senator or a representative, or you're a Democrat or a Republican, you've all worked extremely well together.
Yes.
As a cohesive unit. How important is it that whoever wins the special election in March is going to be able to assimilate into the cohesive group, and that you guys will, the group will be able to be a well-oiled machine to work together. You'll have your differences, but you'll be able to work together.
We, you know, it's interesting because we're all split. I have four senators that I work with, and Vinny was amazing. You know, I have Patrick O'Connor, who I think is amazing, and I have Mike Brady, who I think is great, and Senator Pacheco. So it is extremely important. Plymouth is a huge town, mm-hmm. first of all, and there's a lot going on in Plymouth this year, as we all know, the Plymouth 400th. And you do work closely with your senators. So I have met with everybody that's running, and I'll see what the primary does.
How it shakes out.
How it shakes out. And of course, I will support who wins the primary. And I really feel that everyone that is running would be a good fit. But it's a big responsibility. It's a big responsibility. So,
and it's a big task also. You, mm-hmm. you know, if you are successful in March, you're back in campaign mode.
Exactly.
Within a couple of weeks.
Exactly. And as we know, campaigning is hard work. It's 24/7. So they're going to be doing that again right away.
Are you ready to get back on that bike? Because you're going to have to
get ready to go for re-election. February 11th, I'll be pulling my papers once again. And rerunning for the 12th Plymouth, looking forward to it. Hoping the summer isn't as hot as it was the year that I did run. Knocking doors in 100-degree weather was a little dicey, but hoping it's a little bit cooler this year.
But how much more different is it going to be getting out there? It's not a matter of you getting out there and trying to get, you know, get your word out, because I think a lot of people know who you are.
I hope so.
There are those who may not.
Sure.
But I think you're more of a known commodity now than just someone who is seeking to fill an empty seat.
That is true. I don't know how different it's going to be because, again, I've never done this before. Mm. I've never ran twice. But
you're about to.
I'm about to. I just need to continue doing a good job and focus on my constituents, and that's what I plan on doing, and letting them see that and being there for them. Like, they can always come to me. We have constituent hours in every single town that we represent. People know that they can email me, call Chris. We'll set up an appointment if those aren't convenient for them, and I'll just continue doing that.
And people don't realize how spread out your district is, do they?
It's very spread out. So we have one precinct in Middleborough, one in Duxbury, and I have Plymouth, Plimpton, Halifax, and Kingston. So it's large. It's large.
If folks want to find out more about what you're working on, if they want to reach out to you, maybe there's a constituent issue, how can they do that?
They can email me at the State House. It's kathleen.linatra@mahouse.gov. They can email christopher.jean@mahouse.gov. They can call our office, which is listed on the website for mass.gov. They can follow what I'm doing on Facebook, which is State Representative Kathy Linatra. That's my Facebook page. My website is kathylinatra.com. And they can always send a private message through Facebook as well.
You do respond.
I do respond.
You do respond.
I do respond. I try to respond as soon as possible. But emails are tough, I will say, and I do have a reply message that says I will get to it as soon as possible. But we do get about 300 emails a day.
We do have to work on your video vignettes. Start getting you more infamous.
Well, we have discussed
Chris and I have
that.
To talk, yeah.
Yes, we have discussed.
I told Chris that I would consult with him and help him kind of set this all up.
We're looking forward to it.
Okay.
We're looking forward to it.
Continued success.
Thank you.
Looking forward to having you back in a few weeks, as you're always here. And I have to say, I love the fact that all of the legislators here on the South Shore, any opportunity they get to be on this radio station, whether it's this show or any others, you guys are tremendous. So I want to keep up the great work, and I look forward to talking to you more in the coming weeks.
Great. Thank you so much. Have a great night.
You got it. You as well.
Thank you.
We are going to step aside just for a couple of moments, but next we'll have some folks from the Brockton City Council talk about everything in the City of Champions coming up in just a few moments here on 95.9 WATD. You are listening to Monday Night Talk.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
I'm Mary Ellen from your CBD store in Hanover. With my background in health education here in the South Shore, I know all about managing chronic pain. The results I found from people in my life and from millions of other people across the country using CBD oil has led me to open your CBD store on Route 53 in Hanover. However, there's lots of misinformation about CBD. The Farm Bill of 2018 legalized the use of industrialized hemp. Your CBD store of Hanover only sells products made from industrialized certified hemp, making it 100% legal in all 50 states. There's absolutely no marijuana in products sold by your CBD store of Hanover. In fact, most of our products contain no THC. CBD has many targeted uses. Visit our boutique style store. We would love to explain how we can make it work for you. Your CBD store of Hanover at 1271 Washington Street on Route 53 in Hanover. Your CBD store of Hanover. Help without the high.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, trying to navigate and make sure everybody's seated and comfortable. As we are joined by three Brockton City Councilors. If your headsets are a little too loud, just kind of give me the high sign and I'll turn you down. So starting from left to right on your radio dial, we'll start with at-large counselor Rita Mendez. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. In the middle, she gets to be the rose tonight. She did try to pass it off to win. The rose between a couple of thorns, but we have Ward 4 City Councilor Susan DeCastro.
Good evening, Mr. Tachi.
Welcome back, attorney.
Thank you.
Actually, we have two attorneys in the room.
Yes, we do.
And then, of course, that should be a little bit better. Yes, okay. If you need a little bit, a pinch more, I'm willing to turn it up myself. I got it all the way up to, like, 11 o'clock.
You're always perfect.
That's debatable, but that's Wynn Farwell, at-large counselor. Welcome back to Monday Night Talk, and welcome to at-large counselor Mendez. This is your first time here?
Yes, first time here.
Hopefully not your last. I was actually, when she was one of the first to show up of your group, and I was actually teasing her, knowing that she shares an office with Jeff Thompson, who's also on the city council, and a candidate for county commissioner, Jack Reardon. Because we know Jack's in the running this fall. So they could have a building full of elected officials down there in Brockton.
You talk about being immersed in politics on a daily basis.
That could be interesting. But welcome to the show. I hope each of you had a chance to take in. I'm sure there were a number of events in and around the city and to recognize good Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday and some of the, of what his preachings were in regards to equality. Anybody have a chance to attend anything or at least do a day of public service? No?
Not this year.
No?
But
Rita?
In spirit.
Yeah, I attended the Saturday breakfast, the Martin Luther King.
Oh, right. Yeah, over the weekend, it was usually the usual event that takes place.
Yes, and WACP.
And how was that?
That was awesome. I always enjoy. I try to attend every year. And yeah, that was
And I
fun.
Believe the Cape Verdean Association, they also held their event this year.
This afternoon
at the St. Edith Stein. So, here we are, new year, new terms for Councilor Farwell and DeCastro. How is getting acclimated, Councilor Mendez?
I still am.
Are you?
Yes, but it's fun. Now it's a transition period, so I'm trying to learn as much as I can, picking everybody's brain to make sure I'm on top of everything and reading all the materials and getting myself up to speed.
What was the appeal to running for office? You had a very successful campaign. What was the appeal to running for office and being a part of this next government body for the next 2 years?
Yes, that was very interesting for me because I would never in my years think that I would ever run for anything. And the fact that I did and also the fact that I won, that was even more amazing. But it's just really giving back to the city and to the residents. I've been in Brockton since when I was young, when I first got to this country. And, you know, I graduated Brockton High, Massasoit, so I felt that graduated from law school and started my own small law practice. So I felt I could give back to the residents and do more. So, yeah, and people elected me. So I'm very happy and I feel very blessed.
Councilor DeCastro, this is your second term.
Yes, it is.
How is it?
So far, so good. I have lofty goals for these next 2 years.
You're welcome to share them with people who are listening.
Well, I just want to go deeper. I've spent the last 2 years trying very hard to put a lot of emphasis on constituent services. And now this year I have a few ordinances that I'd like to propose and get approved, especially one on noise in the city. And we don't currently have a very effective noise ordinance. I want to change that. And a couple of cleanup ordinances. I want to make some improvements to the auto repair ordinances that govern auto repair licenses. I have a lot of auto repair licensed shops in my Ward 4. More of the same, more constituent services.
Councillor Farwell, we meet again, former mayor, former school committee member, now at-large councillor, reelected. Talk to me about being back on this council and what it means to you. Because it's to me, I feel it's more of a, there's a different feeling and different ambiance to city government at this moment in Brockton.
Oh, I think that's absolutely correct.
That's right.
You know, it's really very helpful to have women on the city council, and especially we have Rita, we have Susan, we have Tina, we have Shirley Azak. Mm-hmm. I'm surrounded by attorneys, I might add, because we have Jeff and we have Sue and we have Rita. There is a new feel, I think a new enthusiasm to city government. I think Bob Sullivan, our newly elected mayor, has a great personality. And he always practices and preaches inclusion, information sharing. So what he's working on and what he knows will eventually reach us, he shares with us. And, you know, Sue has a great expression, sweat the details. And so I'm confident that this new council is going to look at each issue and sweat the details. I mean, do the research, come up with the right solutions to the challenges that are ahead of us. And, you know, there are a couple of things that I'm looking forward to this term. One is the design and then eventually the location and hopefully the borrowing to fund a new downtown fire station and a new police station or public safety complex, because you might co-locate with Brockton Emergency Management. And the other thing is, which I think the attorneys will find interesting, our ordinances and our charter, they're both way out of whack with state laws. I mean, we just have conflicting provisions that shouldn't be there. They should either be stripped out or they should be amended. And so I think we need to spend considerable time going through the ordinance book and also the charter and get it to where it should be, so it's completely compatible with state law. And if there's a federal law that supersedes it, we need to take a look at that. So I'm blessed to have people who have that legal training, too, which I don't.
And it's interesting you said that, because as soon as you mentioned the mayor, I'm like, well, there's someone else who is a legal mind, practicing attorney. She's kind of put that on hold for a moment, but, you know, if he needs to dip into the legalese, he can, because, you know, that's his forte. And I believe also he's kind of served in the capacity of being a town council for the community. So that right there is fantastic. Anything you ladies want to add to what Councilor Falwell mentioned in regards to having folks, you know, so much so many legal opinions, or folks who have, you know, the wit when it comes to the law, and knowing that that's a strength, it's a great strength to have on the city council. Hopefully, it's not something that's a detriment to the council.
I don't think it's a detriment at all. In fact, I think the council will greatly benefit from our ability to research and write and analyze. I mean, it's really a shame. It has become harder and harder for people who don't have legal background to serve on boards and commissions and on councils and boards of selectmen because it's just gotten so complicated.
You know, it's funny you mention that, because the next thing I was gonna serve up to the three of you, and that is, you have a new mayor, you have a new city council. Does this necessarily mean a new direction, and this gives you an opportunity to fix some of those issues? I know that with the previous administration, and with all due respect, there were a lot of questions that there were people who were serving on boards that probably did not have the place to be on the board, other than being a warm body to fill a seat because there was a lack of a quorum or you know, to be able to meet on a regular basis. And now maybe with a new direction, this is one of those things that a conversation can be had to make sure that if somebody is serving on the planning board, that they have the proper acumen to be serving on that board.
Go ahead.
And please, if you have something to say, just this is a conversation.
I'm very encouraged that Mayor Sullivan will attract people with appropriate background to be on the boards and commissions in Brockton. I think this is an exciting time to serve Brockton, and I'm very hopeful that the positive vibes and encouragement that he gives out will stimulate people to come forward.
And I think the best thing about the mayor, and both Sue and I were on the transition team, at the first meeting he said, I don't care if I'm a one-term mayor. We're going to do it right. We're going to reach out to the community. We're going to include everybody, wherever they may come from, however long they've lived here. They're going to be included. They're going to be considered for appointments to boards and commissions. And he talked about integrity and competence and loyalty to the city. And I think that's exactly what you're going to find. And, you know, he can make that statement about being a one-term mayor because he's got a law degree and an MBA. I mean, if the worst happens, and I don't think it will, that he only served one term, it isn't as though he's got to worry about where will I go for my next challenge in life, because he has the educational credentials to step into really anything. And look, Kevin, so many politicians, their biggest worry is the next election. But I think with Bob, his biggest worry is, how do we move from here to here and improve things for all Brocktonians?
And as Councilor Mendez just said, she's doing this. She ran and was elected to give back. And I think that more people will come forward along those lines.
I'm just excited to really be part of this transition team, because I really think that the mayor and all the city council, we're just going to do a fantastic job. I'm very excited to be a part of it.
But let's be honest. Isn't there a honeymoon period? Is there not a honeymoon period where there's going to be, it's great to have kumbaya for a while, but is there not a time that there's going to be differences about something that's going to be put forth? How do you work through that bump in the road, whether it's as city councilors collectively, or if it is something that's being proposed by the mayor's administration, whether it's a budget or something like that? That's what I think is important. I think that was the issue in past years, prior years, that I'm looking forward. And like I said, when I mentioned it earlier, there's a different feel to the city council, to this administration. It's great. I like it. But what's best? You can have the best team in the world. You can have the best group of people in the world. It's a matter of how they're able to endure a problem or a problematic where there is a problem and being able to get through that together and put their heads together. How important is that?
It's huge.
Oh, it's everything. That's the whole ball game. But so many people start off with what I don't agree with this. Maybe you should start off with what do we all agree with, and then build from there. But again, you're going to hear me say this, and the ladies will get sick of it. The difference now is that we'll all be operating with the same level of information, the same opportunity to be exposed to the details. We'll be all able to sweat the details of a project or an appropriation or a proposal by the mayor and then come to a collective decision on what's best to move forward. And I think that's going to make a big difference.
Would you agree with that?
Yes, I do. I mean, we will definitely have differences. There are some members of the council who believe if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Right.
Whereas there are others who are striving, how can we make it better? How do other communities do it? I love looking at what some of the other cities like Newton do with different areas that I'm concerned about, because they just seem to do a great job, and it's something worth emulating, I think, in many instances, like in the noise ordinance I mentioned earlier.
Sure. Yeah, because that's been an issue over the past few years, where people have said, it's something that's tough to go in and regulate or to police.
That's right.
When you don't know exactly, what the amplification is, the measure of the amplification, to say, hey, this is kind of loud, whether it's you get a noise meter, whatever it may be.
That's right.
And if there's something that, if there's an ordinance on the book that says, hey, if you are somebody who is at a certain time of day, exceeding this many decibels, well, there's consequences. Whatever those consequences are, that's something that'll be laid out as part of that
ordinance. That's right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which could be interesting. And I want to make sure I say this, I'm going to preface this before I pose my next question. And that is nothing ill that we're talking about here is reflecting towards past administrations. This is as a learning tool for the city to be able to move forward with some of the problems that we have seen in the past. Do you guys feel that the familiarity with this mayor means less tension and more productivity? Because I've kind of felt in years, over the past few years, that there's always this tension. And that led to more counterproductive things going on than trying to at least collectively move forward.
Susan? I hope so. I certainly hope so. I believe my last 2 years serving with Bob and my prior knowledge of Bob make me feel like it's going to be much better, much better.
Now, when you're somebody who has served in multiple capacities, you've seen it all, you're very observant. Give me your thoughts.
I agree with you. Nothing we say should criticize a mayor, whether it's 20 years ago, 30 years ago, or last year. But each person who becomes the chief executive officer of the city has his or her own personality and their own management style. And sometimes a person's management style or personality might not engender the same type of feeling of collegiality and cooperation. And so if you have someone who just seems to, by his very nature, be a team builder, it does make a difference. So, with people like Rita and Jeff, keen analytical minds, plus, Bob's personality, it's going to make a difference. I'm really feeling that way.
So I have to ask you, Rita, as someone who you're now an elected official, but I'm sure as a taxpayer and somebody who has followed this, what did you observe as someone who was, a regular citizen that made you obviously want to get involved and do more for the city? I mean, do you feel as though that how this city council is constructed and with this mayor that this could be a very productive time in the city for the city over the next couple of years?
Yeah, just by the fact that the now mayor has been a city councilor for 14 years, he definitely has a wide knowledge. And as an attorney, you learn to problem solve things. So you always look at an issue, and then how do you find the solutions on the problem? So that's always my mind focus, is to look at the solutions and how to solve different problems. So no matter what issues arise, we'll definitely be looking towards that mindset to get things done effectively. So I'm very optimistic, and I'm looking forward to it. Yeah.
I will say this, is that the past three mayors, all of them had municipal experience. Mr. Carpenter, school committee for a couple terms. You had Mayor Belzotti, who served on the council for many years. Jimmy Harrington, who served on the city council for over a decade, as did Linda as well. I want to say Linda might have been like 14 to 16 years. I forgot what her tenure was, but she went from being a ward council to being an at-large council to being a mayor.
That's right.
So I don't have any issue with it. It's nice to see a transition and somebody knows what they're doing. Not that it should be the only redeeming quality is that somebody had served as an elected official, but it's just interesting to see now we have somebody who is an attorney who is mayor, and that could bode well. We'll see what ends up happening. At top of the hour, we're going to take a break just for a couple of moments. When we come back, second half of this segment, we'll talk issues. We'll talk some of the things. We'll kind of see what your crystal balls have to say is coming up in 2020 and some of the goals you want to set for the city for this coming year. You're listening to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATV. Don't go anywhere.
TTFM Marshfield, WMEX Quincy, WBMS Brockton, and Translator W266DA Brockton. This is the South Shore's radio station, 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
Dad, you know I'm willing to drive.
Honey, we're all set here.
But your eyes, you even say so yourself, don't like driving at night.
Well, that's why I'm following the plow.
But that's a sander, Dad. You know what they say.
It pays to stay way back.
It pays to stay way back.
Oh!
Too late.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny & Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. It pays to stay way back. However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
I'm Mary Ellen from Your CBD Store in Hanover. With my background in health education here in the South Shore, I know all about managing chronic pain. The results I found from people in my life and from millions of other people across the country using CBD oil has led me to open Your CBD Store on Route 53 in Hanover. However, there's lots of misinformation about CBD. The Farm Bill of 2018 legalized the use of industrialized hemp. Your CBD Store of Hanover only sells products made from industrialized certified hemp, making it 100% legal in all 50 states. There's absolutely no marijuana in products sold by Your CBD Store of Hanover. In fact, most of our products contain no THC. CBD has many targeted uses. Visit our boutique style store. We would love to explain how we can make it work for you. Your CBD Store of Hanover at 1271 Washington Street on Route 53 in Hanover. Your CBD Store of Hanover. Help without the high.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk, Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Okay, hour number two. Later this hour, we will speak with Mr. Mark Rocheteau, who is the Fine Arts Coordinator at Massasoit Community College. We'll talk theater. Somebody who's who likes taking in local shows. You like local theater. We'll speak with Mr. Rocheteau about that. But right now, we continue our conversation with three of the 11 members of the Brockton City Council, as we have two at-large councilors with Rita Mendez and Wynn Fowler, as well as Ward Councilor, Ward 4 Councilor Susan DeCastro, who join us. I thank you all for being here this evening and making the trek here. As you may or may not know, as you passed, there was a door down at the end of the hallway when you came up the stairs and took a left. Some of you might have taken a right, I don't know. But the Brockton signal is on the air, and we are actually we were broadcasting on it, 1460 WBMS, and I believe that it's going to be set to launch on its own in February. Now that means that it'll have, after the 9 a.m. news, they'll simulcast the South Shore's morning news, but that they'll actually then they'll have its own dedicated radio personalities and music. And my conversation with Ed Perry is that eventually he'd like to maybe have like a little satellite studio somewhere in Brockton. For those Brocktonians who feel a little possessive or want to have something that's tangible in the city, within the city limits, there is, I guess, a conversation about maybe having some kind of a studio, whether it's at City Hall or maybe not at the high school. He had talked about that. Now, he's thrown. It changes daily, so this could change. But just keep that in your hip pocket.
He's making it happen. Good man.
He's making something happen.
That's right.
And that's not to mention also 1510 WMEX. As a matter of fact, let's tease it right now. Ed Perry joins me next week. He'll give us an update as to where things stand with those two legacy signals. So keep that in mind if you are tuned into Monday Night Talk next week. So we get a little familiar with the new city council, new mayor, your new council president, too. Shirley Azak, Ward 7 city councilor.
Right.
Talk to me about a different face. That's someone that we've seen elected multiple times. What's that mean as far as having a new council president, whether it's somebody who has done it before or not?
I think it's good to have a woman president, and I think Shirley was the right choice, because you don't want it to look like an old man's, you know, all the boys.
Good old boys club?
The old boys club.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as someone who has a daughter and granddaughters and a wife, I think the women
deserve...
And a puppy. And a puppy, yeah. The women deserve equal billing, and it should work out very well.
Ladies, your thoughts?
I think it's terrific. And Shirley chaired her first meeting last week. She'll be chairing her first Finance Committee meeting tomorrow night. She's going to be great.
What are you looking forward to? Is this new year, new term, top issues? What do you feel individually? All right. It doesn't have to be the same. You don't have to echo each other. What do you feel are some of the issues that you're going to look forward to tackling? It could be financial, it could be modifying an ordinance, whatever it might be, but you feel that is something that really, if the city is going to continue making the trek forward, these are the things that you personally feel need to be kind of tended to. Rita?
I think a lot of the infrastructure in the city needs to be addressed. There's a lot of roads, a lot of problems, so I think that it was going to be to address, you know, how we're going to raise the money and fund that, but these some of these projects, they really need to be addressed in the city. So there's a lot of people complaining about that. So should be fun.
So you have the interesting part where, unlike Susan, who if somebody comes to her from Ward 3 and goes, I have a problem with my street, you go, well, you have to talk to Dennis Ianeri. That's right. That's his part of the city. You, my friend, as well as Wynn, are kind of almost like you guys are assistant mayors, where any resident can come and say, hey, listen, I've had a problem with my sidewalks When are you going to put them in? What's going on with this?
And last week, I've already met with two different individuals. But what I'll do is, depending on which ward they're located, I'll bring in that counselor just to be at that meeting with me, because I don't want to overstep and take on just because I'm at large. So I want to work in conjunction, collaborative together. So I think together we can make a difference. So, yeah, very excited that I can oversee the entire city, but also work in conjunction with the ward counselor. So, yeah.
So infrastructure and maybe road pavings and taking care, is that what you're hearing from people already, that they're worried about, you know, they're having a problem? When is my street going to be taken care of?
I've already started hearing this when I was campaigning, but I never promised them that the roads are going to get fixed. Mine still needs to be paved, but no. So I've never made any promise that I'm not sure if I can keep, but yeah.
Do we have a number as to how many streets there are in the city of Brockton? It's going to be well over 300, right? 200?
There's several hundred miles of roads and streets. I do know that.
Okay.
I don't know how many actual roads and streets.
I'll have to Google that when one of you are answering a question, so I can at least find out. Because knowing that, that's kind of a key thing. I've heard over the years from different city councilors that, you know, that's a key component. People, you know, they vote for you because, what are you going to do? What are you going to do my street? Yep. You know, are you going to be an advocate for me when it comes to getting those said monies, or, you know, putting together your list of streets that you'd like to see done?
Definitely. We're working towards that now. We have already received a letter saying that I got to put together my streets. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how many streets do you...
Five.
That's it?
Five. So that was... I thought it was great.
I think I only got three.
Really? I got three,
wait
too.
My
way.
Let's collaborate. We'll get eight done.
That's
All right.
Susan, what would you say are some of the top issues? Whether it's something that is pet projects of your own that you'd like to see for the city to continue to move forward, or at least you feel for the betterment of the city for 2020 and beyond?
What's very important to me is, at the end of last year, we did away with the Board of Health. We had a model for the Board of Health that basically works more for towns than for cities. So we did away with it, and we're in the process of adopting the state statute and kind of peopling it so that we will transition into a Health and Human Services Department that will have a chair and an advisory 11-member board. And then under that will be Council on Aging, a department that will address homelessness, another one that will address addiction, and a few others as well. We're kind of reorganizing all of this. And it's very important to me because code enforcement is huge in Ward 4, and there's a huge lack of it in Ward 4. And I'm very excited that we will have a new model to work from.
Counselor?
I think I drive my colleagues crazy because I'm kind of the money man. I always find the question of what will the fiscal year budget be? Now we've got to add in the component of how will the new education funding help us? What will we be able to afford? And particularly, we have collective bargaining agreements that will be coming up for renegotiation, and we do have to be fair and bargain with the employee groups. But 90% to 95% of your fiscal year budget is for salaries and wages. And so those collective bargaining agreements have a huge impact. So for me, this time of year especially, I just kind of get myself absorbed into the financial questions that arise.
Well, and it's a perfect time, knowing that this week, tomorrow, we'll actually hear from the governor. What will each of you be listening for from the governor? Is it going to be a dollar amount as to what he's going to be putting forth for 2021? Are we going to start seeing some of those monies that they put together for that educational bill that got signed into law late last year?
I was just a little worried that I think I read recently they're $800 million short in collecting revenue in Massachusetts for whatever reason. So now,
cyclical, though.
Let's let the cat out of the bag. The governor is going to give an address, and he's going to come out maybe with some budget figures, but it's going to be the legislature that determines what
That's
happens.
Right.
But what's interesting is to see, their revenue projections could be off, And they tweaked them. And then, we see a little bit of a boon here. We got $300 million of collections in. What do? They stitch together a supplemental budget and start distributing cash. So, I mean, it's part of the cyclical nature of the state collection projections. So it doesn't surprise me that they may be off a little bit, but again, it's, you know.
Well, but local officials worry about that $800 million deficit because we don't want it to splash back on us.
Well, what's our piece of that pie?
Well, that's right.
That's right. Yeah.
Right, of that subtraction, that's that integer.
Right. That's right.
Counselor Mendez, what would you say you're going to be watching for, listening for the governor to say during his address? Is it something that you follow when the governor speaks, you listen? Or maybe it's a matter of, I'll wait till I see the numbers in the book and then we'll go from there.
Correct. I'll wait to see what the numbers are then. But I'm sure we're definitely going to be discussing about that,
Okay. Let's talk about water. Water is a kind of a key issue because I know over the past several years it's been part of the conversation as to Aquaria. I know that different administrations sought to get out of the contract that they had with Aquaria. I know that it's a mandate to have a secondary source, a state mandate. I've had conversations with two of you about water, the importance of it. Is it still a major issue for the city of Brockton? Susan?
Oh, it is. Yes, it is. And I would be interested in speaking with the state about whether we still need to have that secondary source imposed on us, just because in the years since it was imposed and we made our Aquaria deal, we've replaced miles and miles of piping, old pipes. We've tightened up leaks, and between that and personal conservation efforts, our water usage really went down. We're doing much better with water per day, and so do we really need to have that? I've been assured that yes, DEP wants us to have a secondary source. We're a city that's growing, but I'd still want to ask the question.
Rita, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with Susan, because when I was campaigning, that's when I got involved into this water, and then I could never understand why Brockton needs a secondary water source, especially it's something that we rarely use from what I understand. So I'm definitely going to be following that more and see where we go with that. But
well, you
and I have had the conversation.
Yeah, you and I have just about, pardon the pun, drowned ourselves in this conversation.
We basically have. I mean, it was during your administration that the city was enduring tough times. Financially and as far as water goes.
My whole position still remains, I can't forecast out 50 or 100 years. If anything were to happen to Silver Lake, either because of a natural disaster or some type of a chemical spill or something else happened, what would our source of water be? So for me, a secondary source is a source that would be able to satisfy the needs of the city in perpetuity, not just, you know, in the short term. So, you know, 2 or 3 million gallons from Aquaria, 2 or 3 million gallons per day from Aquaria is not going to cut it. So what are our options to find a true source of water for Brockton that would be good for the next half a century or even a century, that would be environmentally correct, and that would, you know, hopefully supplant Silver Lake, if God forbid we ever had to do that, or would help ameliorate the problems that we have in Monponset during certain times of the year. And that goes back to the mayor. I think, you know, the mayor is one of these due diligence people, which is, I guess, a pretty common legal term. I think he'll do his due diligence to take a look at this whole issue, and we'll come up with some options.
Well, you know, towards the end of last year, we were talking about what Mayor Rodriguez was doing. He had put together, he was able to broker a deal where the city was going to get this boon of free water, which is good. Now there was word the past couple of weeks that there's a letter of intent that's somewhat in place for a new amount. It seems that the amount keeps falling, and it was this point where it's up to a little less than $100 million. Now we're getting closer to $60 million. It's like $64 million for the purchase of Aquaria. Again, this is a plant that has been infrequently used by the city. What's the thoughts on purchasing this after we just saw a deal brokered to get all kinds of free water? Susan?
Well, we have to get it anyway because we're, you know, we pay so many million dollars a year for the right to take water from it. So to have had this at more advantageous deal structured where we get some free water, that was a good thing. And I give Mayor Rodriguez at the time credit for doing that. As to the letter of intent we have, lots of due diligence has to be done. I have a lot of questions. I want to go down and personally see the place. I want to speak to some experts in this area. We would have a long way to go. A lot of information would have to be revealed to decide whether that's the best thing for us.
Well, knowing that, how many years are left on this contract? How many years?
I think it's eight, isn't
eight.
It?
Eight. I think it's eight years.
Yeah. Eight. So if you do a little dirty math, right now the city is paying somewhere in the neighborhood of, what, $7 to $8 million annually?
Seven.
Mm-hmm. Is it around seven, right? But is it supposed to, is it set at seven or is it going to incrementally increase over the next 8 years at any point in time for cost of any adjustments?
I don't think with the new deal. But let's make sure we remember. If you borrow $64 million at 3% interest over 10 years, it's $101 million to pay back.
Technically, yeah.
That's right.
So do you want to jump on $101 million, and then once you own the plant, any changes in federal estate regs?
You own it.
And then you take on all the costs of the people that work at the plant, the pension benefits, the health benefits. You're responsible for that entire pipeline from Dighton all the way up to Brockton.
And the
inspections.
Mm-hmm.
There is a local gentleman who ran a desal plant who I've put in touch with the mayor, and I'm hoping the mayor will talk with him about all of the hidden costs that come up when you operate a desal plant. So you have to sweat the details.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I hate to be trite, but that's what it's all about.
Councilor Mendez, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I'm not sure if we as a city want to be in the water business, so it would have to be a lot of thought into this fine. So I'll hold off on that, but I'm not sure if we are really, if we're looking, just like what they mentioned, all the costs involved in our taxpayers, so we have to be very careful on what we do here.
And I thought there was a conversation at one point in time over the past year about the need to do some updates to the lines that come back here to the city. Mm-hmm. Who knows what the cost is to open the road, to replace those pipes, mm-hmm. you know? What is the cost going to be? I thought that was cost that was going to be incurred on Aquaria itself. Do we inherit, if the city purchases that plant, does it automatically inherit that cost? So it might be $101 million minus what you're going to have to pay to update that piping from Dighton all the way to Brockton.
Well, right. We just had to borrow $7.5 million because the EPA changed the regulations for wastewater treatment plants.
Mm.
Their regulations cost us $7.5 million. Now, granted, the administration in Washington now isn't too focused on EPA issues, but you could in the future have a very environmentally conscious administration, and that could really ratchet up the requirements to address water and wastewater treatment plants.
Something worth us exploring and discussing as more details come in, as this is vetted out by the city council and due diligence is done by the mayor.
That's right.
So we got a couple more minutes left here, and I want to thank you all for coming in, councilors Wood and Farwell, Susan DeCastro, and Rita Mendez. So if we had to choose our last little discussion point, would you want to talk about two-way traffic on Main Street, which I think it's already in motion. There's already parts of Main Street that are going to be transformed from one-way to two-ways. At least it's a matter if it's going to be all the way from Belmont Street all the way up to Pleasant and Court, if I'm correct. Or am I wrong?
Is it in play? I mean, we've talked about it.
Well, they did the study.
That's
because
right.
They hired the consultant.
That's right.
I think you have to meld that into your discussion on a downtown fire station and where is the police station going. Mm. Because you'd certainly want to have the appropriate traffic flow if you have public safety complexes around. So mm-hmm. It's a jump ball right now as to what will the final cost be, what exactly would be two-way, what side streets would be affected, and how do you blend that into your public safety issues.
When you talk about an urban center like the city of Brockton, one of the prime topics that voters care about is public safety. Whether it's, you know, having enough fire trucks, the fire services up to snuff, whether it's having enough ladder trucks to go to the high rises, and the police department, we know that with an urban center, there's usually activity of the nefarious kind, and so I think moving forward, I know that John Crowley, I think is I don't know if he's retiring, but I know there's the thought or conversation that we're going to see a new police chief eventually. Is that true?
It is true, yes. His contract is up in the spring, and he has been out with health issues.
Yeah.
I don't expect he'll come back. We have a temporary, chief.
Acting. Interim?
We have an acting police chief in Williamson, yes.
So how important is the next chief? Somebody who knows a lot about law enforcement, Counselor Farwell? How important is it?
Well, it's... Very quickly, it's important for two groups, the men and women that work at the police department,
correct,
but the people who live in the community. And I'm one of those people who thinks you have to have a chief who's visible, who's out in the community, who holds periodic meetings with the public, who will hopefully involve himself or herself in these community engagement meetings that the mayor is going to hold, because the trust that you build with the public will come back to you when you really need help on solving a serious crime or getting the people involved in crime prevention.
Councilor Mendez, your thoughts on community policing and choosing the next police chief?
That is something that should be a top priority, because that is the number one concern of the people, is that they are safe. And in order for them to be safe, they have to work together with the police department. If they don't trust the police department, then that's where all the chaos happens. So yes, that is something very important that needs to be addressed. So.
Anything we ever touched upon during our little conversation here, but you each want to take a moment to kind of just discuss? Council Castro, like, as soon as I said it, she started smiling.
Well, you touched a bit about downtown redevelopment, okay,
yeah,
and the public safety complex that we hope to place in the downtown area.
Do we have an idea as of yet, or is that something that's still being studied?
It's still being studied, I believe. But there are other sides. You know, we're a city, and we're the only city in Plymouth County. And so we're very hopeful that there will be more development to the north in the Montello section of Brockton, and also to the south in the Campello section, part of which is my ward. We've done studies. We'll be doing more studies. We're having some development near the Campello train station, and I expect that there will be more. So that's what I want to see in the next 2 years, more unveiling of all of that.
Councilor Mendez?
Yeah, I'm very optimistic about the next couple of years, because I see the city is growing. There's a lot of changes and changes, right? So I'm looking forward to this year, because this is 2020, so I said it's my visionary year. It's a focus for this year. So I've got lots of great plans and great focus for this year. So I'm very happy. Looking forward to it.
Councilor Farwell, you'll be our punctuation to this long sentence that we've had for nearly an hour.
Okay, quick public service announcement. The councilors at large, I believe in the first week in February, we'll be having our first quarterly meeting. So Rita and Councilor Tina Cardozo and Councilor at large Rodriguez and I will be meeting somewhere in a school. Possibly be the Davis School in Ward 4. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to do our part to get out into the community and be visible and answer questions and, again, build that relationship with the public. So,
last quick little question. How has Councilor, former Mayor Rodriguez, how has his return been to the City Council?
Well, I think he's relieved.
Oh, yeah. He's happy to be back.
It was an interesting 6 months for him, huh?
Yeah. I think his eyes were opened in many ways.
Yeah, I think it was the first order to outlaw flip-flops by city employees that really kind of set them, helped him blaze a trail.
Well, I think it was more than that.
Flip-flops and T-shirts.
Yes,
outlawed. That's
right.
Pretty neat having all the attorneys and two former mayors on the city council are.
Yes.
Probably doesn't happen too often.
No. And then it's also, we didn't touch upon it, but Phil Nezzarella, it's another.
Yeah.
You're going to have to find a new city solicitor unless it's somebody that's in-house, or that'll be another topic for another day.
That's right.
I want to thank you all for joining me today.
Thank you.
And, thank you.
We'll have to have you back on another holiday.
Sure, we'll come back.
I love these Monday holidays.
Okay.
We are going to step aside, and when we come back, the final segment of Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
Hi, I'm Jim from Your CBD Store of Hanover. I've been a small business owner on the South Shore for 20 years. The results I've found from people in my life and from millions of other people across the country using CBD oil has led me to open Your CBD Store on Route 53 in Hanover. However, there's lots of misinformation about CBD. The Farm Bill of 2018 legalized the use of industrialized hemp. Your CBD Store of Hanover only sells products made from industrialized certified hemp, making it 100% legal in all 50 states. There's absolutely no marijuana in products sold by Your CBD Store of Hanover. In fact, most of our products contain no THC. CBD has many targeted uses. Come visit our boutique-style store. We would love to explain how we can make it work for you. Your CBD Store of Hanover at 1271 Washington Street on Route 53 in Hanover. Your CBD Store of Hanover. Help without the high.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
We have arrived at the final segment of this Martin Luther King Jr. holiday portion of Monday Night Talk. Our final guest is a gentleman who's been here before, good friend, Mark Rocheteau. Mark, of course, is a worldly man, but he also is the interim fine arts director over at Massasoit Community College. Did I say that right?
No, actually, I've been promoted. It is the coordinator of the Buckley Performing Arts Center at Massasoit Community College.
Oh, look at that. Oh, the interim was just kind of just hanging there for the longest time.
Yeah. But that's been corrected. We have a new president, Dr. Gina Glickman, and she's doing a world of changes for the better, I believe. At Massasoit. And I just happened to get caught up in that. And so the new title is coordinator of the Buckley Performing Arts Center.
And, of course, a lot of things happen over the Buckley Performing Arts Center, the PAC, featuring a lot of different shows, whether it's in-house productions or folks who might want to use the space to do different, whether it's dance or music, stuff like that.
All of the above, and it's going to be a really busy spring. There's no doubt about it. We actually have coming up a week from Tuesday, will be auditions for The Diary of Anne Frank. That's going to be at 6 p.m. on a first-come, first-served basis. That's open to any Massasoit College student and any other college student in the area.
Strictly college students?
Strictly college students. We're a two-tier system in our theater company, so we're open to the community. And then we also have shows specific to Massasoit College and other college students as well. So that particular show is going to go up on that particular show is going to have school performances. That will be at the end of March, beginning of April, and then they'll have one public performance, and then also we have the main stage, the community theater based production is going to be Beauty and the Beast, which is Disney's Beauty and the Beast.
Of course,
under contract there. That's going to go up on Saturday, February 29th. And it's going to run for that weekend, the Saturday, the 29th, March, Sunday, March 1st. And then the following weekend, Friday, March 6th through Sunday, March 8th. And that is doing well for us. If you're interested in getting tickets, you can call 508-427-1234, or you can go to our website at www.massasoit.edu/boxoffice. And then the last thing on the docket for us at Massasoit Theater Company is going to be the New Works Play Festival, which is this is our fourth annual play festival, where we collaborate with local writers. They send in their short plays to us, and then we have a reading committee. We go through the process of hammering. I think we had something upwards of 100 submissions this year, and between what we call the short form and the long form play, we pick 4 short form plays and 1 long form, and then we rehearse them as a stage reading, so the students have the scripts in hand, and then we present it for one night only. And this is a free event, going to be at the Buckley Performing Arts Center on Saturday, March 9th. I believe it's a 7 o'clock start time, but you can check the website for that exactly. But as far as what we have, balls in the air that we have many that we're juggling between Anne Frank, Beauty and the Beast, and New Works.
How did you come to, how were the shows picked? How was it decided that this is, whether it's Anne Frank's, The Diary of Anne Frank, or Beauty and the Beast, what is the process like for folks who are just tuning in? Because I've always wondered, like, how does company theater decide that they want to do production X? How does the Plymouth Community Theater folks, how do they decide, this is what we want to have up on our stage at this time of year?
Sure. I think, well, I can't speak directly for those other theater companies, but if I was to give you a general overview for how theater companies do it, I think part of it is considering what it is that they artistically want to go after as directors and choreographers and producers, and then also what they feel as though their audience will receive and is hungry for. I know for Massasoit in particular, you mentioned Anne Frank. In what we consider to be our student show performance for a school performance, we're actually at the place now where we're starting to collaborate with regular schools that are coming in to see these productions. And we know that, for example, last year we did a small obscure piece called Freedom Riders, which talked about the civil rights freedom rides that happened and whatnot. But it was very pertinent to schools that had that that component where they were doing Martin Luther King, so on and so forth. This year, we actually have schools that are reading The Diary of Anne Frank. So we're a little bit more cognizant in this particular slot in regards to what the local schools are having the students read. And then it becomes almost a page-to-stage experience for the students where they can read it, and then they can actually see it acted out. And I personally feel as though, in particular for this slot, that it's a great experience because just going to the theater in and of itself is a cultural experience, I feel, regardless of what it is that you're doing, for students in more specifically. But when you team it up with what's being taught in the classroom, then it's all the more powerful for the students. Regarding the other shows, we look to what's available for rights, because we do physically have to, all theaters pay for the rights, so that is a
just
factor.
To put them on stage, not to if your particular institution has a television studio, you can't broadcast that on local channel.
Correct.
Because that's a totally separate license.
Exactly, and it's funny you mentioned that, because for Disney's Beauty and the Beast, we had to first make sure the rights were available. There was a couple of other choices that I will not mention at this point that we wanted to go for actually before Beauty and the Beast, and it was not they were not available. So we had to kind of weigh our choices and make some lateral movement on that. But with Beauty and the Beast, it, ironically, there is a video license that you can purchase along with the rights to perform the show, which we have done. And this allows us to video the production and to give archival copies to those who participate in the show, which is, I feel as though it's kind of a gratuity, if nothing else, for the wonderful cast members that have donated their time. But then also they get to see the total effect of their work. Because when you're on the stage, you never really get to see the show itself. And the only way that you can do that is video. But most of the rights...
So it completes the circle for them.
Exactly. But most rights holders won't allow you to video your piece. So,
okay, we're speaking with Mark Rocheteau. He is Monday Night Talk's own theater guru. per se. He's served in capacity as a talk show host. He's been a co-host on this program a couple of different times and sat in on some good conversations. Also, a coordinator, the fine arts coordinator over at Massasoit Community College, the Brockton campus.
Mm-hmm.
Is it worth noting, you're talking about these folks who come in, whether it's students who are investing their time or even the Massasoit Theater Company side of things where the community can get involved when a show is put up and folks want to come in and audition. What would you say the amount of time that is invested by the folks who are, maybe it might be the director, maybe it might be something, if it's a musical, you maybe have somebody who does the choreography or mm-hmm. does mm-hmm. the music sure. side of things
sure.
to the folks who are actually, depending on if they're a lead or if mm-hmm. they're ensemble mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. they have a small part.
It's a worthy investment that's made from the staff, the contracted staff that are hired in, like the directors and choreographers, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. Right through to the community members or the students who are volunteering. Students are getting a direct line into the classes that they're taking. Community members are getting a challenge for their artistic abilities. Some community members are former actors that now have what we call straight jobs. And others are students that are looking to perform in greater venues and to grow and mature. So I always feel as though people, when they come into our stage, they're actually honing their craft for whatever their end preference is, whether it's for pleasure or for staying sharp or for maybe moving on to bigger and better things. The time investment is in and of itself, usually most community theaters will rehearse for 9 weeks. And then they have what we call tech week, and then the show run. So in those 9 weeks, it's usually 3 rehearsals per week, 3 hours a week. So that's 9 hours a week times 9 times 9, talking 81 hours if you're at every rehearsal. And then you have tech week, which is another, 20, you're talking about 100 hours.
It's an investment.
It is, definitely. Just before the curtain goes up for actors, directors, and choreographers. And then the staff, whether it's the choreographers or the props person, they're required to study up on the show before we actually hit auditions and do what we call the research.
Right.
So there's, you can push out a good 200 hours easily in volunteer hours, which I think is an amazing thing for Massasoit Theater Company. One of the reasons why I'm proud that Massasoit sponsors a theater company, because it's one of the few contact points where the community comes into the college and donates their time. And I think that we get, it's a great handshake, because I think we give such a great product on the stage, whether it's student ensemble or the wider community theater company, that they get a worthy experience. And the audience that comes in definitely gets a worthy experience. Not to toot our own horns, their experience is so worthy that they voted us last year as best of the best on Wicked Local's website for 2019. So I'm really proud of the team that I work with and the community that comes in and supports us and volunteers.
You a former actor yourself, or a on again off again actor?
It's funny because we all have aspirations. Those of us who in any form work with theater, and once upon a time I did act a lot. Speaking of company theater, I kind of cut my teeth over there, and they're really good friends of mine at Company and some other local theaters.
Right up the street in Norwell, yeah.
Yeah, so I performed a lot in the area, so yes to answer the question, and I do miss it. Every now and then, now that I'm honored to have a family and with a wife and children, I check in with the wife, and I'm like, I'm really wanting to get on the stage, and something's coming up. And so right now it's averaging like every 3 years I get to get on the stage, and I'm happy to report that the time is coming around.
Oh, my.
And I'm looking at something that maybe by the early summer, all things, if the stars align, and that's really what it is. You know, it's family first. If I have the opportunity after the family, then I will try to get on the stage. But it's not, I don't get to get on the stage as often as I like to. I tried once to produce a show and be in it. And while I had a great experience, it's not something for myself that I will probably do again. It's just a lot to have to contend with.
You know, we're right around Academy season right now, and we just had the Golden Globes. I'm sure you've watched that, and mm-hmm. you keep an eye on stuff like that. But there's also a kind of a local award setting that I think Massasoit and some of its folks who have participated have had a chance to be nominated and even secured awards, correct?
That is correct. Actually, Massasoit for the last few years has participated in what's considered to be what's called the Eastern Massachusetts Association of Community Theaters. And I, excuse me, I don't know the exact number of community theaters that participate in the what we call the EMACs. However, I believe...
I was going to ask if there was an acronym.
There is, because you can't say that every time. But I want to say there's well over 100 community theaters, and it goes from the North Shore all the way down to the Cape of participants. And last few years, we've placed, I want to say, the year before last, we pulled in 12 nominations / 4 awards, and last year we pulled in like 9 nominations for 3 awards. And again... A testament to the team that we have working on these shows and the caliber of the community that's coming in to perform in any competition setting. It's nice to be recognized, but it's not always easy to overcome, you know, the competition. And we've been fortunate that we're kind of hitting on the right cylinders the last 5 or 6 years, and now recognition is coming in the door.
What are the areas of success that you've been able to come away with an award?
Sure. Off the top of my head, last year, Emily Dennis, I'm sorry, Miss Emily Leahy, I know her from her maiden name, mm-hmm. Emily Leahy, who is a Norwell resident, she got Best Actress for her role as Velma Kelly in Chicago. I believe one of our costumers, James Valentin, got an award for makeup. And then we got an award for lighting design. And then the year before we had done, that was the year that we did Heathers. Heathers was nominated, I believe, for like Best Musical. We didn't win, but there was a couple of other, we got nominated for Best Director. Professor Corinne Mason got nominated for Laramie Project, and also Best Stage Manager. Laramie Project pulled the nomination for Best Stage Manager. We didn't win those awards, but in my book, I think being nominated is kind of half the battle.
Yeah, but I have to say, and I'm going to put this in a different realm. Many times I've submitted for radio awards.
Sure.
And up until recently, I was feeling like the Susan Lucci, who is always in consideration for I think an Emmy, right?
Sure, right.
I think it took it wasn't until her 18th or 19th try or nomination, yep. mm-hmm. that in fact she was able to finally secure the statue, and you know, recently putting in for radio awards. Couple of mass broadcaster mm-hmm. awards mm-hmm. That I was able to secure for some of the audio work. So I totally understand the whole thing. It's great to be recognized, or at least to be able to have submissions mm-hmm. and wonder what the judges are seeing and how they are, you know, how they choose. But when someone from your group wins, it's satisfying.
Oh, there's no doubt about it, and
because of the work
mm-hmm. and I'm always happy to see, like I said, the team members that we have are, I can't say enough how proficient they are, and getting more so actually every cycle that we go, but to see them receive that award and to kind of be at the mountaintop in regards. Yeah, again, the nominations are great, and I stand corrected, but the awards are definitely satisfying.
And a lot of times you are the producer. I would say most, if not all the time, you are the producer of these shows.
Correct. Okay. Correct. Yeah, yeah.
So it bears noting that you're not just the coordinator of the fine arts over the college, but you are someone, your name is, it's the billing basically goes through you.
Correct. I am the producing coordinator for basically everything that goes up there on that stage. And again, honored and blessed to be so. And I love the experience every time we get up there.
I want to take a moment just to recognize, again, we're speaking with Mark Rocheteau, who is our guest for this final segment of this this special edition of Monday Night Talk, the Martin Luther King Jr. Day holiday, and hopefully you've had time today to reflect on the good doctor and all of his work in this area of being free as a person, no matter who you are, color, creed, and knowing that we are all equal. And there was a time when we were not all seen as being equal, whether it was because of your skull, the color of your skin, your creed, or even your gender, and that's across the spectrum. And I hope I put that in the proper perspective.
No, you did, definitely. Okay. And to be honest with you, that the charge of Dr. King in regards to approaching each other by the content of the character and as opposed to the color of the skin is one of those social justice charges that we try to reflect in theater. And one of the reasons why we do theater is for what is in the end the moral justice that needs to be exuded out there in the world. And we're just in the end, as when we in the medium of theater, we're just a mirror that we hold up to our audiences for them to look at themselves in society and to reflect upon. And hopefully we're perpetuating some of Dr. King's legacy.
Worth noting that a good friend of ours, Steve Shannon, actually has a show that's going to be hitting the stage later this week, if you're not aware. Almost Maine will be shown at Abington High School, located on, I think, 201 Glenowich Way in Abington. It's going to be held in the auditorium, the Performing Arts Center. This is Thursday and Friday. I think that the doors, I believe that it goes 7:30 will be the curtain call. And now, I don't know so much. I know some of the individuals who are in this. I know they've been working really hard. But being a theater person, you probably know the show itself.
I do. I know Mr. Shannon quite well, and been doing theater with him for a handful of years. Great person, wonderful director, great educator in the region regarding theater and music. And in regards to Almost Maine, it's a hysterical show. Mm. It's 9, I think, vignettes, small little short stories. Yep. Regarding love and the failings and the successes found therein. And it's kind of like Seinfeld. I remember when I saw it a few years back, I got a Seinfeld-esque feeling to it. I remember laughing hysterically. And it's a great show. And I'm sure that the students over there at Abington High are going to knock it out the park.
Yeah, just keep that in mind. And I believe they also have Mamma Mia coming up in the spring.
In the spring, yep.
Mm-hmm. Just something to keep in mind. Anything that we've overlooked so far as far as talking theater before I kind of... Before we punctuate our conversation here,
no, not at all. Thank you for the time. And Massasoit Theater Company is getting ready to throw up a few good shows. And just check our website at massasoit.edu/boxoffice, and you can read up on them, check them out, and if you're interested, purchase your tickets and come on down and enjoy the shows.
Now, I know you're also somewhat of a movie buff, depending on what the realm is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the time that I have.
and the time that you have, because you are a busy person as a producer of these said community shows. But I also know that you you have a little geek in you as well in regards to Star Wars.
I do.
What was your thoughts on seeing The Rise of Skywalker?
So it's funny because
careful, folks, know if you've not seen it yet.
My wife is one of them. She hasn't seen it yet.
All right. So, Jeannie, if you're listening to this right now, you might want to turn the radio off because there might be a few spoilers in here.
So my thing with Star Wars is that first, let me just back up, because with the original New Hope, it was an unknown entity. I remember my dad took me to see it. It was a great father-son experience. It stuck with me for the rest of my life. My dad is an avid reader, and he suggested to me to read the book. I remember reading the book, and back then, before Disney owned it, you could read the book before the movie came out. Disney purchased the rights, obviously, from Lucasfilms, and you can't do that anymore. So I remember when the movie hit, and everybody was jib-jabbing on Facebook and kind of not happy with the movie because it didn't get in deep, I reverted back to the fact, I'm like, well, did you read the book? And, you know, Star Wars has never been a deep series where you get all the backstory that you want and everybody. So I say that to say, in regards to this movie, Rise of Skywalker, I thought that it was great. I thought for what it was, I think that the message was over the top in regards to the fact that it was the whole title in the end really is about making a choice. And I know for myself, it sounds really simple, and it's not, it's difficult to do sometimes, but when we wake up in the morning, you got a choice to make. You know, whether the world is giving you lemons or lemonade, you have a choice that you're going to be happy about it or you're going to be sad about it and you're going to do something about it. You know, and that's something, the lesson that I learned being a cancer survivor. And so when I saw the movie, I celebrated the where they were going with it. And for me, I'm a little slow on the uptake, and I didn't really get it until the towards the end of what really was happening in the whole titling of Rise of Skywalker, because that was, I'm like, where's Skywalker? Like, when's Luke coming back? You know, and not to spoil it, but it went in a different direction, is my point.
Here's, well, I'm going to be a little bit more critical with the few minutes that we have left here.
Okay.
You know, just like, you know, yeah, we remember the original three movies, which were titled, we were technically in the series of nine,
mm-hmm.
four, five, mm-hmm. and six.
Correct.
Anybody can agree to disagree, but I think Empire Strikes Back is probably the best of all of them. It's the center square. If you're doing Hollywood Squares. but what's even better is, you know, A New Hope was, what my understanding is that Star Wars wasn't necessarily, it was kind of a joke, a prank type of a thing. It wasn't expected to be this phenomenon.
True. However, it was expected to have a substance of longevity, because I remember after Star Wars, the first Star Wars, New Hope, the talk was, and I think it's even alluded to in the comic strips in regards to Darth Vader having that battle with Ben Kenobi on the lava planet and having getting burned, like how he got to be who he was because of this. And oh, by the way, that's going to be in movie whatever when they come around with the original trilogies. And our minds were like just blown that there was so much more potential in the storyline.
So see, what my issue was, mm-hmm. is you had the original movies,
mm-hmm.
A New Hope, you had Empire Strikes Back, and then Return of the Jedi, mm-hmm. okay? Then after that, you dealt with the prequels.
Right.
How are we going to do the prequels, okay? Which spawned The Phantom Menace,
mm-hmm.
Attack of the Clones, mm-hmm. and Revenge of the Sith, okay?
And Revenge of the Sith, for me, is the only one that I can watch over and over again.
But see, the Revenge of the... But so the idea is that, so originally, again, we saw 4, 5, 6.
Sure.
And then they had to go back and CGI,
mm-hmm.
you know, and those people who are fans of Star Wars, you can be critical of it, but the idea of once you got to Revenge of the Sith, the idea was is you had to find a clever way to stitch the first three to the prequels,
sure.
to the original three.
Sure.
And then whoever came along, because long ago it was thought that you had to have, there was going to be nine.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then that went by the wayside. And then it came, you know, it was kind of shelved
mm-hmm.
for a bit. Then you have The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Last Jedi, The Rise of Skywalker.
AKA Disney.
Yeah, AKA Disney. And you bring in Rian Johnson
mm-hmm.
and J.J. Abrams.
Sure.
J.J. Abrams will forever be, to me, the tire retreader. And I say this, let me say this.
I agree.
I thought that he did a great one, and I cross his streams here,
mm-hmm.
okay? Because normally when you talk of Star Wars, you don't talk Star Trek. But J.J. Abrams was the one who was tasked with rebooting the Star Trek movie series.
I agree completely.
And he did a fantastic job.
So let me say to J.J. Abrams, so we got to also recognize, too, that we're talking about two different generations of storytellers. Mm. When you have George Lucas and his technological abilities, and then you have J.J. Abrams. So when George Lucas did the prequel, he really should have, and I heard that he should have let it go and let somebody else take it
mm-hmm.
over. And then by the time J.J. Abrams comes around, the technology is so much more realistic that you can't, you know, it's just phenomenal.
With Star Trek, he did a great job with you know, dimensionally taking it in another direction, but then he decides to retread the tire and do his own version of Wrath of Khan. Why would you go down that path again? So he was forgiven for that on the mm-hmm. Star Trek verse. But then he comes in and basically, you know, The Force Awakens is a revamp of A New Hope. I don't care who you are, but if you look at it, it's, you know, it's a desolate planet. It's this lone person who's trying to find themselves.
True, true.
So there's a lot of similarities. It's not word for word. It's not just, that's how I feel.
I don't get it. And the Millennium Falcon was there and takes them off the planet. Just like
Ryan Johnson takes it into a different direction, and then JJ comes back. And honestly, I kind of feel as though, and I'll leave you with this, I almost feel as though the Rise of Skywalker is very similar to Return of the Jedi. And then I'll just leave you with that, and I'll let you figure that out.
We'll have to have this conversation
when you come back.
There's truth to that, and just to throw a monkey wrench in all of it, is that Rogue One was the best of all of them.
Solo, I have to say, is you know, Ron, it was kind of a disappointment because, you know, when that Ron Howard came in as a director, I was kind of expecting more.
I agree.
But it was too Disney up.
It was dark too. I couldn't even see it.
Yeah, I couldn't see it. But anyways, well, listen, I want to thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Mark Rashto has been our guest for this segment. Thank you very much for tuning into Monday Night Talk. Until next week at 6:15 p.m. Have yourself a great night.